It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Over the years, so much trial and error on how to prevent invasive species from reaching the Great Lakes. Thinking about those underwater speakers, the electric barriers, the air bubble curtains. Invasive carp have the potential to decimate the region's $7 billion a year fishing industry. Join in, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org to join the conversation. Mark Fritz is a fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the La Crosse Fish and Wildlife Conservation Office. Mark, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Hi, Amy McGovern here as well, Aquatic Invasive Species Program Supervisor for the Midwest Region of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Amy, welcome to you.
Good morning.
Good morning. There has been, Amy, decades of work, as you know, to prevent invasive carp from breaching the Great Lakes, you know, trapping and blocking and all of these things. And, you know, researchers do think that the threat to Lake Michigan is greater than previously thought. What is the mitigation strategy as you see it for the Great Lakes?
Well, good morning. Thank you. I think that the first thing to note is that we haven't, we have a lot of surveillance efforts going on with state and federal partners in the Illinois River. We really haven't seen that population front move in the last decade. So they're still about 40 to 50 miles from Lake Michigan, which tells us that a lot of the removal efforts that we're doing to control that the species where they're most dense, like commercial fishing and promoting the removal of fish is keeping them sort of where we want them, which is away from Lake Michigan. And we're continuing to work with the state of Illinois and other partners, again, to just make sure that we monitor that population very closely throughout the year using the traditional gears, like you've mentioned, commercial fishing, removing those fish from the system completely, and using new technologies like environmental DNA to see if we have evidence of the fish in waters where we haven't found a lot of them. So we're using those multiple techniques and tools to make sure that we have a really close surveillance of the system. And so far, so good.
Well, that's interesting. It sounds like their non-progression, their status quo is a positive thing.
It is. It is. And I think that we put a lot of effort on the water into making sure that we know where that population is. And so I think that we certainly couldn't fall back on the efforts that we have right now to be on the water and conduct that surveillance. And also removing those fish is a huge control to their tool there. The state of Illinois supports programs and they remove 1 million pounds of fish every year. So that is a key effort in this whole integrated effort to control them and keep them at bay.
Wow, 1 million pounds of fish. Mark, you monitor the Upper Mississippi River. Carp like to congregate in different areas depending on time of year. What are you seeing on the Mississippi?
Well, we have a range of different population densities that we see on the Upper Mississippi River here in Wisconsin, along the Upper Mississippi, along the Wisconsin-Minnesota border. That region is a fairly sparse population. We see a smattering of adults that come into the region. As you go further downstream, the population increases in density. And when we start to get down on the border of Missouri, that's when we begin to see reproductive populations. So at this point in time, we are confident that we only have a small population here in Wisconsin.
Amy, can you step back for a moment? Remind us, how did they end up here and why are they so harmful to our waters?
A good question. Why are we here, right? They were originally imported from Southeast Asia to the southern United States to really help aquaculture and wastewater treatment facilities to keep those retention ponds clean. And like a lot of other invasive species, you don't anticipate the the flooding that might happen there, the accidental releases. Really allow these fish to escape into the Mississippi River system and migrate into the Missouri and the Illinois rivers. So they're bad because they are prolific feeders. They eat a lot, and that in turn outcompetes native fish for food. And they have a lot of babies. They can produce a lot of eggs. They can move long distances. And as we, a lot of us know, and we've seen the videos on YouTube, they can also jump out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
That's one species. The silver carp is that one species that can jump out of the water. And that poses a safety hazard to recreational boaters as well.
Amy McGovern, Aquatic Invasive Species Program Supervisor for the Midwest Region of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Mark Fritz with us as well, fish biologist based in La Crosse, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You can join in on invasive carp, what you want to know, what you've seen that you think will work to keep them at bay, 800-642-1234. So, Mark, our efforts in the Mississippi River and the patterns you see there with the carp, can that inform how you approach what could be done for mitigation in the Great Lakes or elsewhere? What can the Mississippi tell us?
Yes, we always try to ensure that we have an active communication network between our teams who manage invasive carp in different areas of the country. We want to share best practices wherever possible and enhance the management through our different lessons learned. The population on the upper Mississippi River is well studied. We take every bit of information we can from every fish we catch. We look at things like their length and their weight and their age, sex distributions. And we use advanced quantitative methods like models that help us predict how those populations have come to be, how they're going to change over time, and how those populations might respond to specific management actions like removing more fish or removing fewer fish or putting in barriers that might slow their movement.
Sounds like data is king here.
Yes, ma'am. It's the name of the game. It's what we do. We as scientists, as field scientists here on the UMR, that's our primary duty. We go out and collect as much information as we possibly can, and then we pass that information on to decision makers like Amy.
Amy, you mentioned earlier environmental DNA. What are some newer ways being used to deter invasive carp from spreading?
It's a good question. We have, I think, a great opportunity right now. We're doing field tests of new technologies at two different sites to test underwater sound, which is really interesting, as a deterrent for invasive carp. And one of the sites is closer to Mark there on the Upper Mississippi River in Keokuk, Iowa at Lock and Dam 19. And the other site that it's being tested is at Barkley Dam in Grand Rivers, Kentucky on the Tennessee River. And these sites basically are unique sites where we have a pinch point in the system, you could say, that fish are getting through the lock structures and up into the next pool of the river, but water doesn't get over the dam. So you have one spot where they can go through, and there we're installing aquatic underwater sound devices on the river bottom that project sound into an area to deter fish. And in the case of the system in Kentucky, it also includes a bubble curtain. So we're tagging fish in these areas and seeing how they respond behaviorally, as well as native fish. We want to make sure that we know how and understand how these systems affect native fish as well. But the idea is to block their passage if we can.
For a while, the scientists were looking into these bio bullets, or these encapsulated fish poison that break down in the gut of the carp and kill it. What has happened on that front? How are, how effective are bio-based control products?
Still research is being done on those. I think there's a little bit less acceptance of those until we really have all the information, right? When you're putting something like that into the system, we are always thinking about the native fish population and how these various control mechanisms affect those native fish. So the research is ongoing for that. More focus, I would say, on the technology for the deterrence, including the sound, and also carbon dioxide is another technology that's being tested at at certain locks to deter fish.
So sound and carbon dioxide. Mark, what technology do you think might work for where you are and work on the Mississippi?
Well, those technologies that Amy described seem to be fairly applicable to any space where we have carp. One of the incredible things is that scientists have been able to tune those technologies to have effects specifically on carp and to minimize the effects on native species. So there's good chance that what we're learning in Kentucky can be directly applied to the UMR as well. So I'm very hopeful that the deterrence technologies combined with our other efforts like fish removal will have a lasting impact on the populations here.
Amy, how about you? Are you hopeful that the Great Lakes will be preserved here and not be invaded?
Absolutely. I think you have to think that way. We have a wonderful partnership, and Mark alluded to the communication across partners, state, federal boundaries. It's one big system, and we're working together to control carp, and I am very optimistic, yes.
Well, Amy and Mark, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Amy McGovern is Aquatic Invasive Species Program Supervisor for the Midwest Region of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Mark Fritz there, fish biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the La Crosse Fish and Wildlife Conservation Office. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.